You are listening to Affirmations for Living with Edvige, where each week you're invited to join in our upbeat discussion as we look deeper into spiritually based principles that can change your life. We know that change can open doorways to new beginnings, and we are dedicated to helping you make the changes needed to improve your life. And now, here is your host, Reverend Dr. Edvige. Hello, everyone, and welcome in once again on this lovely Wednesday evening. And of course, I always thank you for showing up because I appreciate you understanding that you could be a million other places doing other things. And so for those listening, thank you. And of course, as always, if you like what you hear today, please spread the word and tell your friends because it's all about making a difference. For those who don't know, my book was finally released. Yay! You're Not Crazy, You're Awakening. Just came out this past Friday, last Friday. So if you haven't gotten your copy yet, please go to Amazon and get yours today. Again, that's You're Not Crazy, You're Awakening. Alrighty, so today is an interesting day. We're going to be talking about chronic conditions. And my guest is all the way in Honduras, and so I have to thank her for joining us today. Milana Ashley is an award-winning author. Her books and articles offer readers a new way of seeing old problems. And isn't that what this is all about, affirmations for living, affirming a positive way of living, finding new ways of thinking, of doing things, stepping outside the old paradigm and moving into our fifth dimensional and higher consciousness. She is also a board certified traditional neuropath or naturopath metaphysician. She works as a holistic counselor, focusing on helping those afflicted with chronic conditions. And, you know, very interesting, as you will discover, chronic conditions can mean all sorts of things to different people. And so I want to really fine-tune chronic when we talk about spirituality, our mental conditions, as well as those physical conditions. So if you have any questions you'd like to join us today, please feel free to call in at 888-627-6008. Again, that is 888-627-6008. All righty, Milana, hello and welcome in. How are you?
Good evening. Oh, I'm fine. How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you.
Good. This is a wonderful evening. The temperature is nice here. And it's really kind of quiet. Nobody's cheering for soccer, football games or anything like that. So it should be a good evening for us to chat.
Wonderful. Well, you know, before we even go into chronic conditions, really just share who you are and how you found yourself in Honduras.
Well, my husband, I'm a naturopath and and that means that I'm a doctor of natural healing. And my husband and I had moved from Florida to Hawaii. We lived in Hawaii for about 7 years. And there, you know, the wind changed. That's all I can tell you. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was time for us to move on. I've been studying with traditional elders of different cultures for a while. And I had already been on pilgrimage with Mayan elders when this all started to occur. So I, you know, in retrospect, now I can give you a list of 200 reasons why I'm here. At the time that we made the decision, it was because of changes that were going on in my family. My parents' health was declining. I had new grandbabies coming in. My sons were in the military and were being shipped overseas. And no one had asked for help, but we were over 13 hours away from them. So if they asked for help, it was going to, you know, it was going to be a big commitment of time to try to get in there. Mm-hmm. So this was during the housing boom.
Okay.
And to try to duplicate our lifestyle, living near the ocean, in the U.S. was just out of our price range. Nature baths don't make a lot of money. But having visited outside the country, and then also so many people from all over the world passing through Hawaii and talking to people from Costa Rica and other Central American countries, it just started to plant a seed. So we meditated on it, really. We prayed on it and then meditated. I have a Tibetan brass bowl, mm-hmm. and I put, what we did was we put all the things that we wanted based on what we knew we didn't ever want again, and just meditated with it. And then we got a globe. My husband found a globe in the parking lot of Walmart's in Hilo, Hawaii, and brought it home. And we sat with our hands on the globe, and we looked at it and meditated, and just Honduras.
Wow.
And as I looked at it, it was like, oh, it was perfect, because it was like 2 hours south of New Orleans. And it was, New Orleans is like even a 10-hour drive from where my family was in the Ozark Mountains. So it was just a straight shot, and it was very affordable. And it was going to allow us to have the lifestyle that we wanted, and we would be close to family in Florida and in the Ozarks, and, you know, perfect. Mm-hmm. And then Hurricane Katrina came in and changed a lot of that. And the thing that we didn't, visiting a third world country is a lot different than living in it.
I'd imagine so.
Yes. And so the things that we, as in our sheltered American living, take for granted are a big deal here, like not having water or going to a hardware store and you have a clerk. You have to tell the clerk what you want. You don't just roam the aisles and find what you want, like Home Depot or something like that. And they test everything that you buy because you're not going to return it. It's a permanent deal. So they have very little shoplifting here for just that reason. The guards at the door with the gun and deter that. And then the fact that you have a clerk who is assisting you all the way through it and making sure that everything that you are buying. I mean, we bought a ceiling fan. They take it out of the box and they hook it into wires to make sure that the motor runs and that it turns. You know, they don't assemble the fan blades on or anything. But, yeah, so there's just and then communications. For one thing, we didn't speak Spanish. And then secondly was we moved here in February. In April, they came through and gave us a telephone number. And in September, they ran the line. In November, they turned the service on.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So we couldn't call anybody except each other. You know, because we only had the little cell phones, we had to go into 20-minute drive into La Ceiba to go to an internet cafe when we wanted to contact family. So in an effort to get closer to them, geographically we did, and yet in the ability to communicate with them, we didn't.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
What came from that, you think? I mean, was there, you know, and just looking, obviously, you know, to the general public, that would be, well, it just takes that long. But internally, when we understand things sometimes happen for reasons, do you think there was some lesson or something in that to gain from the process?
Oh, absolutely. For one thing, I'm a Gemini. I love to talk. And nobody here understood me except my husband, and he was dealing with his own level of stress because we had to do repairs on the house that we moved into. And so there were so many mornings that I would walk down the front stairs and I would say, oh, what a blessing it is to be here. And then there were the same other mornings I walked down the very same stairs and I'd look up at the sky and go, how much longer do I have to do this?
Perspective is everything.
Absolutely. But it was, you know, I've never really lived around neighbors. And here I am in, I'm not in a city, I'm in a village, but I have neighbors on three sides of me. And I remember when we were in Hawaii, we would be really grumpy when we were hearing noises carrying over the jungles. We were in, you know, surrounded like 3 acres of jungle. Mm-hmm. And here, that was one of the things I was concerned about, was music and loud music and noise and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think what it is that it's just the sounds of living. It's not intrusive noises like, you know, when we were in Florida, people would have these big loud sound systems on their car that when you would sit at a stoplight, your car was vibrating. So their desire for music was invading your desire for tranquility. And so that was caustic. And I mean, it's temporary in a car, but sometimes, you know, you can be in neighborhoods where that happens. Here, there Spanish people love loud music, but it's for a party or something like that, and then it's over with. But most of the noise that's here is not noise; it's just the sounds of people living, children playing. You know, that kind of thing. So it's
joyful sounds, joyful noise, right?
Yeah. Yes, it really is. And it's been a good education for us in learning to accept things that are not of our design.
Mm-hmm. The law of allowing. So learning to allow things to unfold as they unfold, and the tolerance to just move right along with it.
Right, because, you know, it's like when there's a stream of water coming. If you put your hand and try to dam the water, keep the move of water, that force can build up. And the pressure eventually of you trying to fight that force of the water is going to affect your bones, your muscles, your nervous system, probably your digestion and everything else. Where when you learn to flow with the water, it becomes easier, and you do that by changing the way that you look at things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what made you want to become a naturopath?
I've always loved plants, and I actually, according to the Mayan and Chinese calendars, I was born under the sign of a healer.
Okay.
And it's just, I've always been someone who wants to help, wants to care, wants to, you know, as a little girl, I can remember living in a subdivision, there would be elderly women that would live, they were living by themselves. And on May Day, I would go out and pick flowers, probably out of the neighbor's yards as well as ours. And I would put them in empty jars, peanut butter mm-hmm. jars, whatever, and water, and I would put them on their front porch. I would ring their doorbells or knock on their doors and run away. And I did it so that they would feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just always, I tend to see, you know, with my training and my desire to know, I just tend to see the world differently. To me, now as a practitioner of subtle energy, I see problems, whether they're physical problems, emotional problems, or just everyday problems, as an imbalance in the flow of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And energy can always be transformed.
Absolutely. And it's amazing when you know that you can facilitate that. Yeah.
It's very empowering when you understand that you're part of that mm-hmm. energy. And so, you know, it's like the Hawaiian kapuna when tsunamis would be coming in or something. You know, if you can't stand there with a stop sign and stop them. But what they would do is they would work with the natural flows of of nature, and they would dissuade this force that was coming in. There was, when we lived in Big Island of Hawaii, there's a man named Uncle Robert, and he had a home, and it ended up being in the middle of a lava flow. Now, he's a very staunch Catholic, but he also combines his religious beliefs with the old ways. Mm-hmm. And so what he did was he stood in the yard and he chanted and he prayed and he asked for Pele, who is the goddess of the volcano, mm-hmm. To bypass his property. And the lava went all the way around his property and flowed into the ocean. And he's got this huge green patch in the middle of this absolutely black field of lava.
Wow. Isn't that just beautiful and a testament to we are energy, and when we're in harmony with it, it will bend, fold, and mold for us.
Absolutely. It will. I mean, because we are, it's like your brother, your sister, you know, they are part of you. So mm-hmm. push comes to shove, they're always there. They work with you, like twins or even. So
exactly.
That's what we are. That's what we are with nature.
Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that, you know, not enough people understand and appreciate, that we must be one with nature, honoring all life, because source is in and through all. Every animal, every plant, and we're supposed to really honor it. And it's unfortunate, especially in this country, that we don't see enough of that.
Right. Everything has a price tag on it.
Yeah. It's really kind of sad. So how do you define a chronic condition?
Well, chronic conditions generally come on slowly, and yet they can result from a traumatic accident. In the case of the trauma, what happens is that the person can't release the trauma. You know, they're caught up in it. And that's what scar tissue is. I was absolutely blown out of the water when I realized that before I got into this study. Mm-hmm. I had cut a bagel, frozen bagel, holding it in my hand. Not a very intelligent thing to do.
Oh,
but
no.
Quite the learning process. Mm. And so my husband took me to the emergency room for stitches in my palm. Mm. And the young doctor who did the stitching told my husband, he says, now massage her hand for her every day. And just gently massage it, and that way there'll be no scar tissue. And I didn't understand why, but it was absolutely correct. There's not a single scar on my hand from the stitches. But working in subtle energy, I began to understand what happened there, because cells hold fluid, and fluid holds information. And it holds whatever information you apply to it. So that's why a little child falls down and gets hurt and has a boo-boo, and it goes to its mom and mom kisses it, and the child is miraculously healed. And you think that, you know, the child is, what, gullible or has great faith in mother or whatever. And part of it is that what has been the pain and the trauma of the fall has now been replaced by love.
Mm.
And love is the, you know, the ultimate healer.
So now, if a person had the injury and they didn't massage it, they didn't do anything, and then later on they have scar tissue, how do you address it at the later date?
Well, the reason that it's there is because they've been feeding negative energy into it. You know, when they fell or when whatever happened, it was, oh, that was stupid. Why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. You know, or if they hadn't been making me have to rush, I wouldn't have done that. So what's happened is that when there is pain in an area, your body is actually sending extra attention there. Extra energy is going there, and extra attention is there. Mm-hmm. But when what you're thinking about is negative, then it's negative attention that's going into the tissue. And so what we have to do is we work with subtle energy therapies like flower essences, essential oils, body movement healing like Feldenkrais movement, even yoga, mm-hmm. Or just stretching and breathing and thinking something positive so that you are moving into the limitation or the pain, not pushing into it, but just moving into it till you've reached the limit. Mm-hmm. And then you hold that and you breathe in all the new energy. Mm-hmm. You exhale out the wasted old stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you do it from a tranquil mind, where you just are relaxing and enjoying feeling this new, you know, new condition going on. And what you're doing is you're releasing and letting go.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Because some people, you know, especially here in the States where there's so many accidents, people get so stuck and then they get trapped with taking medications and pain pills, and you just see this vicious cycle, and years later they still haven't recovered.
Right. And the thing is about sometimes with pharmaceuticals, that becomes a downward spiral. You know, you're taking a pharmaceutical for pain or for whatever, and it after originally from a plant source. Mm-hmm. Because it's a non-organic, it's more difficult for your digestion and assimilation organs to be able to identify it and allow it to become part of what you need. So anything that's inorganic, you oftentimes can't totally eliminate, so it'll store itself in soft joint tissue or in muscle. So then you end up with another problem. You start to have arthritis or rheumatism or some kind of inflammation. So then you go on another pharmaceutical. And It just becomes a downward spiral. It's not even like a gerbil wheel, because it keeps getting worse and worse and worse, because your body's natural ability to return to homeostasis, to return to balance, when the immune system has been compromised so much by having to deal with all these foreign things in your body, mm-hmm. It loses its integrity. It loses its vitality. Vitality is a big word with chronic conditions. Integrity and vitality. And when it loses its vitality, then it doesn't have what it takes to fight anymore. And so then oftentimes with the standard American diet, SAD, there's not the nutrition coming in that helps replenish. You know, energetically, food is supposed to be the source of energy for us, but it takes energy to digest and assimilate the food. Mm-hmm. Now, some foods actually give more energy than what they take to digest and assimilate. Then there are other foods that it's a break even. They're, you know, the processed foods. They actually, or let's say if your diet is totally cooked, there's where it would be a wash, where you're getting vitamins and minerals to keep going, but it's nothing extra, which would be necessary if you have an illness or a chronic condition. Mm-hmm. And then there's the foods that are totally processed, and those actually take more, you know, like your processed meats and things that come in plastic bags, they take more energy than they give you. So you're working in a deficit the whole time. And a lot of times when we get into a chronic condition, especially a physical chronic condition or illness, the limitations and the pain cause us to turn to things that comfort us. And a lot of times that comfort is not the healthiest thing for us. Mm-hmm. So we just become weaker and more inflamed. And then the inflamed tissue loses its integrity totally. So then it's susceptible to viruses, parasites, fungus, infections, all kinds of stuff.
Wow. Yeah, that definitely is a spiral downward.
Yeah.
Wow. So what brought about this awareness or this interest, do you think?
Well, my husband and I had a natural health clinic in Florida for a while, for a number of years. And what I noticed was that the clients that came to us that were native-born U.S. citizens generally came with conditions that had been diagnosed as chronic, or they were so tired of fighting and you know, that we were the last ditch effort.
Yes. You know, the last resort. Why is that? That people will resort to becoming healthy naturally, right?
When nothing else has worked, right? But then, so we had them, but it was when we started getting more and more clients from South America, or Asian or European born people that had been in the States for a number of years and were starting to have conditions that were acute, like allergies or vomiting or migraines or levels of pain that had come on recently. Mm-hmm. And at first, you know, I thought that when it was Asian and South American people, I'm thinking, oh, well, this is a skin pigment. They have greater vitality. Because the darker the skin pigment, the more tenacity it has. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, it's tied in with race. But then we started having African American clients that were coming in with all the chronic conditions that we were seeing in the white skin, European descendant people. So that meant not as much, but it was still there. Fibromyalgia, Epstein-Barr, you know, high blood pressure, major mm-hmm. high blood pressure, cholesterol issues, that kind of thing. So then I just had to go back to the drawing board again. My theory had been shot. I needed to come at it.
Your hypotheses didn't pay out.
Oh. Absolutely. But you know, that's kind of like the minds that are part of creating a problem can never be part of the change. So when you are coming at something and you find that it's not panning out, you can't really twist what you're seeing to make it fit your theory. You have to just let go of the theory and step all the way backward and start coming at it with new eyes.
Absolutely. You know what? Right out the gate, I would think, okay, it's everyone in America, right? So I'm like, okay, so what are all people doing across the board in America? Eating dead food, drinking dead water, being overpolluted, being overstimulated. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And on top of that, I started, that was part of my interest in traditional cultures. In traditional cultures, there is also the perception of we. Mm-hmm. And in our culture, we're taught me to be an achiever, to achieve. So that puts us under tremendous amount of emotional stress, trying to be better, be the most, get the most, have the most. We tend to measure our worth by our bank balances or our paychecks or our ability to be the best at something instead of being part of something. So it's not only that we are eating dead food, we're not connected to the earth anymore. We're losing that polarity by living in conditions where it's all environmentally controlled. We're not outside letting the rain fall on us, going barefoot in the wet grass, up on top of the building, breathing in the night air. I've had women that had so much PMS problems. Mm-hmm. And what I found was most of the time that their menses was not with the moon. In traditional cultures that are living with the earth, the dark moon is the time of menses. That's when the Native American women would have their moon lodges, and the young women who, you know, their rite of passage when menses began, and the women who were ovulating regularly, they would go to the moon lodge and the moon pause. The women who were menopausal, moon pause, the grandmothers, they would take the children. The men would take the boys, and they would go hunting because it's perfect hunting. You know, you can't be seen out in the night to be hunting. So, you know, it was just perfectly balanced. And here in our culture with PMS, because we are trying to live 24/7, be, you know, bringing home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, never let you forget you're a man, and raise kids, and,
yep.
You know, all of that kind of stuff. And so where most of I never had a woman come to me with a PMS problem that was in sync with the dark of the moon. And so what I do is I have them start going outside and sitting in the evening for just maybe a half an hour or an hour and looking at the moon and looking at the night sky and the stars. And so, and just maybe even talking to the moon, to Grandmother Moon, to that there starts to be that connection so that they, with, you know, some herbal help, then get back in sync again.
In the right cycle. You know, speaking of that, I grew up in South Jersey on 5 acres, and I remember there was an open field across the street, and the rain would always begin across the street. And so all of us kids would run into the rain and then step out, or we'd have half our body in and half our body out, and we would play, and, you know, and gradually the rain would come across the street. And I remember how we had wild blueberries growing up down the sides of our road, and we would take buckets and go pick blueberries. And I mean, it was just wonderful. And we were in nature, and my mom made sure we went out and we played. We would go out in our woods and find all sorts of things and come back with them. And it's so important that you have that grounding, isn't it? It's so important.
Absolutely.
And we just don't have that. We moved into cities, and yeah, that's unfortunate.
And we poured concrete, and then we put on rubber-based shoes. We started walking in petroleum, eating petroleum, breathing petroleum, and we're no longer connected to the earth. And yet, I mean, I can remember getting a phone call from a woman when I was on the Big Island, and she was traveling around the island to go to a meeting, and she called me. She said, "I am in so much pain. I have so much back pain, and I've got to teach a class at this meeting, and I'm not even there yet, and I don't know what to do, and I am so far away from anywhere where I could go get an aspirin or anything. What can I do?" And I told her to go lay down on the ground. Just go lay down on the ground and take a nap. And when she woke up from her little nap, the pain in her back was basically gone.
Wow.
And so she continued to do that. She made the whole time that she was at this gathering, she made sure that every day she laid on the ground. But see, we are made from the dust of the earth. And I mean, biblically, it says that we're made from the dust of the earth. And we need minerals. Minerals are essential mm-hmm. to our health and well-being. And so what is the dirt? Minerals. And when sometimes, you know, we carry coins in our pocket, mm-hmm. pennies made from copper, the touch point for kinesiology for copper is right there at the bend of the top of the femur bone, you know, the top of the thigh. And if you're eating a lot of sugar, you become deficient in chromium. Chromium is antagonistic to copper. So that means that if your chromium balance is exactly the way it's supposed to be, that when you are in contact with more with copper, that it will keep it balanced for you. Now, you need a small amount of organic copper, mm-hmm. which you will get from the soil when the plant draws it up through the roots and has it in its body and you eat the plant. But you can also get too much of inorganic copper by copper water pipes, carrying pennies in your pocket, things like that. But if you have enough chromium in your system, it helps you keep that balance. And when we eat sugar, it destroys chromium.
And you
so
know,
the more sugar you eat, the more likely you are to absorb copper. Copper weakens veins. And so here, are we looking at aneurysms?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you know, the American diet is full with sugar because, you know, they're thinking, oh, sugar, I don't eat candy. What, you eat processed food? You eat white rice and you eat crackers and you eat all these things that turn to sugar.
Absolutely. And the tobacco industry is the second largest consumer of sugar.
Wow.
So anybody who's still into that habit, it's in your cigarettes, it's in your pipes, it's in your cigars. It's That's part of the addiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and sugar is definitely an addiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. So what did you do that was different?
Well, the first thing I did was pray and ask for answers.
Yeah.
And what happened there was that this amazing journey began. It was like a roller coaster ride. And there were some ups and downs and twists and turns. It led me into emotional healing work, subtle energy work, and then in studying metaphysics, which is beyond the physical. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting, I met a shaman in Florida, who was a student or part Lakota.
Okay.
And she invited me to Sweat Lodge. And she said, when I met her, I said, she came to my meditation class, and she was a guest from one of my students, and I said that, you know, it was very nice to meet her, and she said, well, I know they were supposed to meet. I don't know why, but we'll find out why. So what happened is that we ended up connecting. She invited me to a sweat lodge, and I went through learning the steps of that with prayer ties and meditation, and it was phenomenal experience. And then she took me through a number of other preparations, was really what they were. And the last one was a vision quest. And in the true Native American tradition, there would be days of fasting in preparation, and then you go off into the wilderness with maybe just your water and a cloth, and you prayed and you sang and you chanted and you connected with the earth until you got your message.
Mm-hmm.
You generally got a new name, a name that fit the path that you were to fulfill, and then you were shown in a vision what you were supposed to do. And, you know, names are very powerful because all letters and all words have an energy vibration.
Yes.
And so when your parents give you a name, they give you a name based on what they want for you. And sometimes as you're growing up, you find that that path is not true to your heart. And so there's a number of people that are getting new names. I have a spiritual name. My name Milana is a spiritual name. It was given to me by my kapuna in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And it means holds the light. But anyway, for my spirit, for my vision quest, the fascinating thing that came out of that, what we went to a park where there was an Indian burial mound. And I sat on the mound and I meditated for an hour in each of the four cardinal directions.
Mm-hmm.
And my teacher sat back and made sure that, you know, nobody was going to bother me or anything while I did this. And after each hour of meditation, I would write in a journal what had come to me, what I had been aware of, mm-hmm. what I had seen, what I had felt, thoughts that came to me. So that happened with all four of the cardinal directions, and then she blindfolded me, and I did it all again. And when it was all through, she had me sit down and just write what my feelings were, what I felt, what I thought, what I heard, what came to me. And I remember hearing in my mind to honor her for all that she's teaching me and giving me, but not to start putting feathers in my hair and going around saying I was a Lakota healer or anything like that, and that I would have other teachers and I were to honor them for the truth that they were sharing with me, but not to become their disciples. And it was given to me, those words were given to me with a picture of Felix the cat, if you can remember the old cartoon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so that whenever he was in a fix, he would reach right into his bag of tricks and he would put his hand in the bag and exactly what he needed would be there. And that's what they were telling me. And so after that, then I ended up studying with Kapuna, the Hawaiian Kapuna, Mayan elders, Garifuna teachers, and each one, when I sit with a client, I'm always told what they need, and it's not exactly the same, but it's the thing that they need to help them get past the stumbling block that they're on. So it was an absolutely phenomenal experience.
I bet. Wow. So now, what are some of the conditions that you consider to be chronic?
Well, there's the physical illnesses that we're aware of, Epstein-Barr, fibromyalgia, high blood pressure, ulcers even, things like that that are repetitive or that, we haven't found cures for. But then there's also depression, post-traumatic stress syndrome, anger, rage. Any pattern of repetition that brings unhappiness, such as relationship choices and relationship behavior, job choices, even people who have continual debt, that is a chronic condition. It may not be a chronic illness, but it's a chronic condition. And when you're caught in situations or a repetitive process that continually brings dissatisfaction, it's chronic. Since being in Honduras, I have begun to realize poverty is chronic. Chronic is basically the inability to see past your present circumstances. When you are like locked into something that you can't be free of, that limits your ability to happiness and joy and bliss in your life, it's a chronic condition.
Wow. Now, that's interesting, because then you could say, and some of it could be from being programmed that way, your beliefs then, so because a lot of those habitual things are internal programs that somehow you got stuck in that same cycle.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, it's not only the training of the authority people in your life and their words, but what you see them doing. And so, this is what is real. The fascinating thing is that people who have had wealth, if they lose everything, they will regain their wealth because their wealth is their norm. And you will always seek your norm until something changes drastically to change your total belief system. And that's what poverty is that even when money comes in here, what happens is that people will spend it and get rid of it to perpetuate the poverty because this is what they know. And sometimes, like with our culture, which there's so many more emotional issues in our culture than there is here, but we take on guilt, whether or not our deserve level, whether or not we deserve to have things better, to have things easier. And yet, when you move into to cultures that don't have all of that cultural stress, you know, the to
keeping
perform,
up with the Joneses type stress.
Yes, yeah. Then they'll balance a little bit more. But even then, you can see the repetition of when there's this flush of money, they won't necessarily save a portion of it. You know, even in religious training, the churches will teach you to tithe, that you're supposed to be tithing. Mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer in tithing, but I believe in tithing to myself first.
Indeed.
And so what happens is that when you begin to tithe to yourself, take that 10% of whatever, of a dollar, whatever, and put it away, as that accumulates, it begins to change your belief about yourself and your perception, because now you're no longer broke. Mm-hmm. You have money, and you don't touch that money except for let that money make more money. If you have an emergency and you need something, you don't go and take that money out of the bank because it's too hard for you to pay yourself. So you get a loan against it. And the bank's a loan against it. Because you'll always pay your debts, but you won't always pay yourself.
So then how do you help people see past their present circumstances?
A lot of times, perfect story is my husband had a client who came to him. She had like rheumatoid arthritis, and her fingers were deformed. She couldn't dress herself anymore. She had to use a motorized chair. And when she would come to our office, she would come in this motorized chair. And so my husband worked with her on nutrition and herbal supplements and those changes. And it was making a huge impression. It was making a big change. It was cleaning her system. It was allowing her body to let go of the impurities that were causing the inflammation and the calcium spurs that were causing the inability. So she actually started coming on a walker, mm-hmm. which was wonderful. But she finally got to a point where she plateaued, where she wasn't healing anymore. She wasn't regressing, but she wasn't moving any farther forward. And so he asked her that back before your illness, what was it that you did? And she was a concert pianist.
Wow.
And she said, that was my love, was to get up in the morning and to sit and play in my pajamas for an hour, 2 hours before I ever had my breakfast or anything. And then that's what she would do in the evening before she went to bed. And so you could see this was her passion. Mm-hmm. And part of what, when she started having problems with her hands, then came the fear. So that means that in an area that was already losing integrity, she was feeding negativity in with her fear of not being able to play her music. And, of course, we always realize our greatest fear because we are thinking it over and over and over again. So what he started doing with her was taking her through a visualization. And he had her in a state of relaxation and had her visualize her piano. And getting up in bed, out of bed in the morning in her nightgown and going and sitting in front of the piano and playing the piano. And then when the visualization was over, she told him, she says, oh my gosh, I feel wonderful. And she actually, for that moment, had more movement. Mm-hmm. And then it regressed. Because see, when you have a chronic condition, you wake up in the morning, and if you have been fortunate enough not to rerun and rerun and rerun this in your mind all night, you might wake up feeling good, but then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, the pain is going to come, or the anger is going to come, or the problem is going to come back. And so then by the time that you put your feet on the floor, you're already into the old, you know, the old toxic reality. Mm-hmm. And so he told her, when you wake up in the morning before you ever move, see yourself, while you're still in a relaxed state, see yourself getting up, going to sit in front of the piano, playing for an hour, hear the music, feel the freedom that you felt, the love that you, for the passion for what you do, feel those things, and then go ahead and get up. And then when you go to bed at night, when you get into bed and you get comfortable, you lay there and you go back into that visualization. And it's all right to go to sleep in that visualization, because that's much better to have running through your mind all night long than pain you may have felt getting into bed, or a situation, a fight with your husband or whatever, before you got into bed. And what happened was that by the time that we left to go to from Florida to go to Hawaii, she had stopped coming. She had healed to the point that she now had the tools that she knew what to do.
See?
And she was seeing the results. Because, see, she was seeing past her present circumstances. And that's the main thing. Because what you see in your mind, you manifest in your life.
And so all the time.
Exactly.
I love this. I preach this all the time, so you have no idea how thrilled I am to hear it from you. Because it's so vitally important that we pay attention to those thoughts.
Oh, yes, because we are creating our reality. I mean, the things that we see, the material things that we see, our desk, our computers, those things, you know, in quantum physics, those are little molecules. You could actually, you know, you can expand them enough that you could put your hand through them. But we collectively agree that this is the reality. But the personal reality within this collective one is totally up to us. That's our free agency. That's a divine gift. We are creators.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, what your reality is between your ears. And when you start to really understand the truth, reality is like a big old iceberg, okay? The small amount that we see above the water is minuscule compared to what all there is below the water. And the same here. The greatest is in the etheric field. And the etheric field is moved and worked with your mind. Mm-hmm. And your emotions are a catalyst for that. So to me, when I work with people, I don't separate mental from emotional, because, you know, which came first? Do you have a thought that brings about emotions, or do emotions bring about the thoughts? If all of a sudden you find yourself in a little state of fear and it's like, oh my gosh, where'd that come from? What was that about? And then you start looking and you find logic to apply to your emotions. And yet, you could have been driving or walking through somebody else's fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we do have these big emotional energy, or these energy fields around us. And sometimes we're just walking through somebody else's stuff.
Exactly.
We
pick it up.
Right. And then we try to apply logic to it. And so then we take it on as our own. So then it's like, well, you know, oh, what must have been, you know, I bet you it was this and that and the other. And then we start to own it.
And that's never good. So then when we're talking about the energetic field, it's important that we understand how to put up protection and how to make sure that we don't allow other stuff to enter into our field. So in your practice, do you teach that as well?
I don't teach as much protection,
okay,
as I teach people to become. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a tuning fork. Okay. You strike a tuning fork and it has this vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And that vibration affects anything that's around it. Like energy attracts. So you will not attract negativity to you unless you are
negative.
Of the same vibration. Exactly.
Yes.
And
okay.
So when you are out in the city and you're walking, it the energy fields that we have are a lot like having a cookout, mm-hmm. you know, and you got all this smoke and you can run your hand through the smoke and you don't have your hand in the smoke, but if you smell it or feel it, you can mm-hmm. feel the smoke still on your hand and you can smell it on your hand. But if you go and wash it, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. So as long as your vibration, as long as you are doing the personal practices that keep you in a healthy, balanced state with a tranquil mind, happy, that's what you're going to attract to you. If you find that close proximity with someone else that's negative, then you wash it off. Wash it off. Don't take you. If you have to work in a situation that's real negative, when you go home, at the entrance of your home, wash your hands. I mean, it's very, very biblical to mm-hmm. wash. A lot of cultures, change your clothes right at the door. Wash your hands. Change your shoes. Do not bring the outside world into the sacred sanctuary of your home.
Exactly. Yeah, I take my shoes off as soon as I enter my house. They don't come in to any of the, you know, the home.
Right, but there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of little things that we can do like that mm-hmm. that really make our life simpler and easier. People who, like massage therapists who work with people's bodies and energy, they always wash their hands and arms when they're through with clients. It's not just a hygiene thing. It's clearing one energy field so that you're prepared for the next one. You're not passing anything on.
Absolutely. So now, what would you consider wounds from the past?
Oh, wounds from the past can be things that have happened to you in your childhood mm-hmm. that you may have blocked out. People who don't dream or who try to meditate and they don't see anything, mm-hmm. they generally have created a wall that protects them. Then there's also things from the womb. You know, you can put your ear on a lady's tummy, mm-hmm. on her abdomen when she's pregnant, and you can hear the baby, you can hear the heartbeat, you can hear the baby moving. Well, you don't think that baby can hear what's going on outside?
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah. I'm so sorry, as you know, human beings, we tend to be very arrogant as far as in the field of nature, but especially we think that because something cannot speak, that it's not intelligent. Or, I'm so sorry, European descendants, if they don't speak our language, they're not intelligent. So what happens is that babies are very, very intelligent beings. And I personally believe that the reason that they can't speak well for 2 years, 3 years, is to give them a chance to forget everything that they've seen and all, so that they're not spilling the beans to us, because we're down here in school stumbling around trying to learn mm-hmm. our lessons.
Absolutely.
I have worked with children, and I have a healing technique that has actually allowed people to go back and remember things that from when they were in the wombs of their mother. There was a woman that I worked with. She was a recovering drug addict and alcoholic. And in this technique, she had gone through a lot of sexual abuse from her father and all kinds of other stuff. But in this visualization, this relaxed visualization, she started twisting. She was just laying on like a massage table. She was twisting and contorting and stuff, and I knew that whatever was going on was just something that she was seeing in her mind. It wasn't real. Mm-hmm. It was either the past or, and so I just touched her and calmed her, and I asked her, I said, "Lillian, what are you seeing?" And she goes, "She's poisoning us." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "My mother, she's poisoning us." And when her mother was pregnant with her, her mother was abused and mistreated by her husband, Lillian's father, who is the one who sexually molested and abused her and actually traded her for alcohol as a small child. But anyway, her mother tried to kill herself when she was pregnant again. And so she had taken something, and this woman remembered it. This was part of, she remembered it in the technique, but she didn't remember it before, and yet it had to affect her
emotionally.
Feelings of self-worth.
Yes. Oh my goodness, that's so sad.
Yes. But it was amazing. And she called her mother. She called her mother to double check on it, mm-hmm. and. When I talked to her, because she said, I'm going to go and call my mother. And so when she did, and I saw her the next day, I said, what did your mother tell you? And she said, my mother wouldn't admit to it, but she wouldn't talk about it. And her mother was Catholic. So it was, you know, part of the religious thing and the cultural thing. But she says, so I know that it was true.
And that's no doubt the mother was probably now or had been feeling the guilt from it all of this time. So if she had only discussed it with her daughter, it would have been a release for her as well. Oh, my God, that's so sad.
Exactly. But then there's one more wounds from the past. Mm-hmm. There's spirit, what I call spiritual DNA. Now, we accept the fact that if our fathers or mothers or grandfathers or grandmothers had a big bridge on their nose and red hair or what, you know, whatever, that we're going to have those things, that DNA gets passed on to us. But there's spiritual DNA as well. And this is actually talked about in the Bible in Deuteronomy when it talks about the iniquities of the fathers shall be passed on four generations.
Generations, absolutely.
Absolutely. And what it is that it's not that you have to go to jail if your father robbed a bank, but any emotional issues that your father or your mother or sometimes your grandfather or your grandmother did not resolve before you became impregnated in the womb, you were, you know, in the womb, become part of what is passed to you. Mm-hmm. So here we run around knocking our heads against a wall trying to figure out why we do the things that we do and why, and like I said, we try to apply logic to it when it's not even our issue. And once we realize that and we start to work on the fear or the anger or the thing that is a knee-jerk reaction for us, not only do we find the release, but the energy cord that connects us to our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and the other millions of people that we have within 40 generations, it's like loosening a guitar string.
Absolutely. You know, I have to share a story because what you're saying is so 100% accurate. In my awakening process, several years ago, I had a visitation from my grandfather. Now, my grandfather passed when I was 16 or 17. And in this experience, he knocked at the door. He came in. And my grandfather was, my entire life, I knew him as being blind. And so in this experience, someone knocked at the door. I opened the door. There was my grandfather, youthful. He had his sight. He walked in. He smiled at me. He hugged me, and he left. Then I had another experience where my grandmother came and visited, and she was 90 when she passed. Well, in this experience, she was youthful, she was glowing and beautiful. She came in and she hugged and said, thank you, and she left. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And that's when that verse in the Bible came to me, because they realized that as I was doing the work to transmute and release all of these programming, all of these different things, that I not only was doing it for myself, but for them. And so that was my little, you know, confirmation from them that thank you.
You were doing healing for them, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, there are
I'm not sure. Hello? Hello? Yes, I am. Oh, did it just end? Oh, it just disconnected. I didn't hear her. I'm here. Oh, okay. Yay. Alrighty. So, Milana, if you would finish that statement that you were making, please.
Oh, I just got so distracted by losing the connection.
Well, you know what? We lost the connection, I think, probably because you're in Honduras.
Yeah, things get kind of, you know, the satellite gets a little weak here.
Well, and it's been an hour. So, you know, it's like, okay, look, we've given you an hour. But now we're just getting good. So.
But yeah, so you were, oh, what I was telling you was there are religions that do baptism for the dead. And the old Jewish faith used to do baptism for the dead. And you know, you would think that, oh well, you know, they're dead, they're in heaven, and they, you know, they're okay now. But we carry things with us. I mean, I'm sure that in the etheric, in heaven, in wherever, that you're still honored and loved for who you are, whatever you choose to believe in. And when you have, and it's easier here. That's why we're in school here. Is because here we have pain and pleasure to help us monitor and learn. Whereas once we have no longer have these nerves and nervous system as things, that it, you know, that doesn't mean that we don't learn, but I would imagine that the learning would be slower.
Absolutely. You know, and that's so true, because that's why we came forth. That's a part of the reason why we came forth, to expand. Because think about it, in these heavenly realms, right, where we're back to just being our non-physical selves, well, we understand instant manifestation and pure love and joy and all of these things. So how do we truly expand if we don't know the opposite of it? And so we step out of source and we come into this physical to experience duality, because that's what's causing us to expand and grow. Because you don't really appreciate what you have until you don't have it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing watching children and from different income, because I have one neighbor that lives on one side of me, whose father works for the oil company. And so these children have everything. And on the other side of me is a family that barely has a roof. So, and it works very well in here. Everybody just kind of accepts everybody else. But the children that don't have anything really are more satisfied and happy with their life than the children that have everything, because it's not enough.
Isn't that the truth? It's never enough, and there's always pressure to want more. And, you know, there's such a thing as moderation in all things, right? Because there has to be a balance, and we're so overstimulated. And I wrote my dissertation for my doctorate on religion and the changing face. And I said, you know, the human condition, we're so programmed to seek outside of self. That's why we go to religions, and that's why we have to have all this stuff. And the reality, the truth is always within. And if we would go within and find our value in our connection to source, to God, we would be happy with the littlest of things, because our joy doesn't come from stuff, but it just comes from our connection. And that's what we're missing. We're missing our connection to our God self. And when we miss that, then we need all this outside stuff, and we find our value in outside stuff, which means absolutely nothing.
Right. Yeah. A lot of times, religions have a tendency to teach that the source is outside of us. Mm-hmm. And in traditional cultures, they understand that the source is within them, that there is a great spirit that they come from, but that is part of who they are. Mm-hmm. And so they don't need things outside themselves as much. You know, the basic things that protect their bodies and their health and feed them and clothe them are, you know, if you weren't freezing and you weren't hungry and you're happy and your family is happy and loves you and you love yourself, what else do you need?
Exactly. And, you know, well, here in America, we would say, well, there's a lot more. But things are okay, and certainly by no stretch of the imagination am I saying that I don't want to go without the comforts that I've been born into. However, they're not what make the person, you know. They're
right.
Not, yeah, and so we really have to learn how to balance it. And I think that's a curse in some respects to be in this country where we have everything at our beck and call, because we don't really get to appreciate the finer things, and those finer things, well, quite honestly, is God and our connection to, you know, and treating our family with so much more honor and love as it should be, and our neighbor with concern, and we become so indifferent and so cold and shut down. It's really sad.
Well, with great wealth comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And the responsibility is learning to be true to yourself. So there's nothing wrong with having things or money. It's the worship of things and money.
And absolutely. So now, how do you connect poverty to a chronic condition, as a chronic condition?
Well, again, it's back to the fact of people being stuck in seeing things a certain way. Mm-hmm. I started a project here with single mothers. And it's quite often men will desert their wives here. You know, there's some little 15-year-old girl that's batting her eyes, and the hardship of life and the drudgery, the guys just will leave.
Wow.
And so this leaves a woman with her children, and there's very few choices, especially in our outlying communities, because they can go to work in the piña fields, in the pineapple fields, and that's $7 a day now. And that's working in the sun with long sleeves on and getting your arms cut up, and you can get a machete and clear grass and get paid less. If someone gives you money and you have somebody to watch your children, you can get on a bus and travel in to the nearest town and see if you can find work. You can start a business. And other than that, there's only waiting around for some other man to come around who says, you want help raising your kids? And he moves in. And of course, that can bring problems in itself, and it's going to bring more kids. Mm-hmm. So some of the women have started little businesses, something that gives them enough money to feed their families, their children. And one of my neighbors is a fisherman. And she was pregnant and couldn't pull the fishing nets in anymore. That's how she found out she was pregnant. And so she couldn't fish anymore. That was her only livelihood. Mm-hmm. And so when I found out, she was out back in the river fishing with a little fishing pole in the river. And so I asked her, I said, oh, are you fishing for bait? I figured that, you know, she was going to take that as bait out to go fishing with the nets. And that's when she explained to me that, no, she can't fish anymore because of her pregnancy. She says the minnows she was fishing for were to feed her children.
Wow.
And so what I did, my husband and I like to walk the beach in the morning. Mm-hmm. And when there's been storms and things, glass is broken, And the ocean takes it and rolls it around for a while and forgives it and throws it back up on the beach. And so there's all this smooth beach glass and different, we found tsunami glass in Hawaii, and then there's the beach glass here. And so we pick it up and we collect it, and we talk about making jewelry, and of course we never do. So what I did was I went into town and I bought some wire, special jewelry wire. Mm-hmm. And I took it to my neighbor with the glass, and I showed her a ring that I had bought back when I was 20 years old that was all twisted wire with a cat's eye stone in it. And so, because my Spanish skills are not that great. And so I showed her what I was talking about making, you know, that could be made for necklaces and earrings and things. Well, I wasn't even thinking about the fact that she's used to having to twist wire to work her fishing nets to secure those.
Makes
so
sense.
She's really excellent, and she's very creative. So she started making sea glass jewelry. I offer it on my website. It's beautiful stuff, and it's made, and the thing, you know, it's not only recycling and a beautiful craft thing, but there's something about, you know, the fluid of the ocean is almost perfectly matched to the fluid in the womb. Mm. And in the womb we are created and given birth, a whole new beginning. And that's what happens to these old beer bottles everything else,
yeah,
that's been dumped around and broken. The ocean takes it and holds it in this gestation and smooths it and soft, you know, mm-hmm, rounds out the edges and then gives it back. And so it's like when you wear this jewelry, it's a symbol of forgiveness.
Absolutely.
Of rebirth and forgiveness.
Yeah, I was thinking second chances, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is what she does, was doing now. Now she's back to fishing again. Her baby is just over a year old, and she's back to fishing, except that right now there's no fish. So I told her, I said, you know, Christmas is coming. You need to get some jewelry made and start talking to the men in the community about and people for about jewelry for Christmas, so that gives her money coming in. Mm-hmm. There was another woman, I buy bread from her, pan. She makes these little pastries, cinnamon rolls, things like that. Mm-hmm. And she bakes all morning, and then she walks the streets all afternoon to sell them. And one day, she came and she asked me, because I always buy from her every week, and she asked to borrow money from me. And she'd never done that before. And she says, my daughter, I've got to pay for her to go to school now, and I don't have the money, because school's not free here. So I lent her the money that she needed for her daughter to go to school, and I told her, I said, what I'll do is I'll just take it in bread every week, because if she didn't have money then, she wasn't going to have money if she had to pay me back on top of.
Yeah.
So I just took it in bread. But as we got to talking, I found out this whole business, raising her five children, putting them through school as a single mom, she did with an apartment size range and one little gas can. And so that gas can is the stove. So she's got to cook for her family, feed them. And when she puts her pastries in the oven, if she runs out of gas, she's got to unhook it, carry the gas can down to the, you know, 2 or 3 blocks till she finds a place that is selling gas, trade it in for a full gas can, and carry it back. And if she doesn't have the money for a full gas can, then she only gets a half gas can, carry it back. So, you know, it's like, it's survival living. This is what the fisherwoman was doing. She's surviving. That's what the pan woman is doing, surviving. So that's when I came up with a project working through Indiegogo, contribution thing, to try to get money to help them expand what they had so that they could see greater than survival. Because if all you're doing is focusing on surviving, that's what you're going to get.
You'll never excel. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, and of course, well, I found out that the jewelry, I was figuring when the weather was bad, she could go back to making jewelry, the other gal. Mm-hmm. And then I find out she doesn't have a light in her house because she didn't have the money. I mean, she built the house. She didn't have the money to run electrical for overhead light. So she's not going to be able to sit in the dark and make the jewelry. And so I asked her, I said, well, let's get you a light. And she goes, well, my roof leaks. So that's why, part of why she hadn't scraped together the money to wire it is because she needs a new roof, really. So, you know, I've got this big project plan to get her a new roof and everything else. And it never even dawned on me until I was looking at why I was failing with this project that I was reflecting my values on her. And I didn't get the money that I was hoping for to help these two women. Instead, I wanted $4,000 and I got $420, I think. But some volunteers that were here from the UK, mm-hmm. from England, people my age, you know, a retired school teacher. She and her husband bought the stove, a new full-size stove for the pan lady, Isabel.
Wow.
And then I was seeing a man here who does a lot of work with handicapped people, and he was coming for healing consultations. And he asked me, he says, what can I give you in exchange for what you're doing for me? Mm-hmm. And I said, a gas can. And so he brought me the gas can for Isabel. So that she had the second gas can. Now she has actually three, and we've got her stocked up with, you know, lots of flour and sugar and stuff to work with. And the same thing with the fishermen. So I had about $200 that I could do something for her with. And I asked her, I said, you know, I wanted to do something great for you, and it's not working. But I do have this little bit of money. 4,000 lempira, $200. Mm-hmm. And if you had that much money, what would you do with it? She says, I would close up the front of my house, put in a business window, and turn the front of my house into a fish market. Because when she would go out all night fishing, then she would come in, she'd have to get on her bicycle and bicycle around the community to sell her fish. She couldn't come home and take care of her children mm-hmm. until she was through selling the fish. So this would allow her to come home and sell her fish from her home. And so that's what we did with that. And men in the area volunteered their time and help to do the concrete work. And the money bought the materials. And the doors to her house were made out of scab lumber that she had hammered together with a nail. She bought nails. She hammered them together with a rock. And so her oldest daughter had problems with, if she heard loud noises, she'd turn white and pass out. And it was a calcium problem, but it was brought on from living in fear with being afraid with her mom gone, fishing, and being in the house. And, you know, no windows and the doors not firm. So now all of that's been corrected. So what has happened is that out of these two little projects, it's like a candle of hope that's been lit. And now there's more single mothers. We have one young single mother who has started a pizza business.
Wow.
She's doing fantastic. There was no pizza in this. Of course, you know, Honduras. There was no pizza here in this little community. There's Pizza Hut in La Ceiba, in the big city, but not here. And so I taught her to make pizza, and she has this little pizza business now, and it's doing phenomenally well. And, you know, I have a Facebook page called Gringos in Paradise. I think you have the link for that. And that has all these people's stories with photographs so that they get to meet the people and see the people. And so if anybody ever wants to go and check that, and my website, which is Wisdom Pathway, gives more information about these women, because they're phenomenal women, their tenacity. But to be able to light a candle of hope for them, and now other candles are being lit off of that first one, and it's like this ripple
absolutely
of hope.
Yes.
And it's phenomenal, because if these women, you know, my vision, my dream for this community is to have these women be able to have these strong in-home businesses, and then be able to be a voice in the government that goes on here. And maybe with more people from working classes going into government, we'll see less incubation of the poverty that creates the crime that, you know, that exists.
Now, do you have a way to, for people listening, can they still donate, send money, or do you still have something like that, a fund set up?
Well, what I'm doing now, they can go to my website and they can donate money, but this year, this was my 65th birthday,
and I had
none of my family and friends were coming in for the first time in 7 years, and I wasn't leaving. And so, you know, it felt like a rite of passage, and it needed to be shared. And yet I wasn't going to have any of my special people here. I mean, I have friends here, yes. But talking about people that have crawled over my 65 years with me. And so when I meditated on it, it came to me to ask each of my special people to send me a bead for my birthday, just a little bead. And they did. And then it came to me that I was to journal this process, which I did. Mm-hmm. And then when the beads came in, photograph them. And I also asked that when they sent the bead, that they write just a little message to me to tell me why they chose that bead. Because I wanted the people to be in the present moment with me, remembering me, thinking of me when they chose the bead. Because part of it is the energy imprint. Mm-hmm. Anything that you touch, you put an energy signature to. And that's why handmade things are so important to the Hawaiian people, because it has your aloha, your mana on it. And so this is what I did, was I got all these beads, and then I sat down and put them all together in this great big necklace that I wear. And it was beautiful. And then it came to me that I was to take this and turn it into a book. And so my husband and I did that. We formatted the book, and I wrote up the story of what it was like and how I did it and why I did it. And then he formatted the step-by-steps so that they're very clear and precise, so that anybody can make this necklace. They get to come on my adventure of the soul. Mm-hmm. In the first part of the book, and then here's the step-by-step so that they can do their own. And then I thought, you know, I feel strange taking something so intimate and commercializing it, you know, which was the project of doing the beads and having people share their love with me in these tokens that they had picked for me. Mm-hmm. And then it came to me, why the book? The proceeds from the book go for my mother's.
Wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
And so, what's the name of the book?
The Threaded Gem Adventure. The Threaded Gem Adventure. It's on Amazon and it's on Kindle. And I am kind of putting out a challenge. I would love to see this month. You know, don't wait for your 65th birthday. Don't wait for your 60th birthday. This month, make a bracelet or a necklace of gratitude. Get a hold of all the people in your life that you have feelings of gratitude for, that have helped you, have done something, have taught you, have led you, have been there when you needed a friend, and ask them for a bead. And make your own necklace or bracelet or something from the beads of those people. Make a gratitude necklace.
That's absolutely lovely. Wow. And what a way to end this show on gratitude once again. I have to thank you. Do you have any closing thoughts for the audience? This has just been so wonderful. I thank you so with all my heart. I thank you.
Thank you. I do have 5 steps that I use that are kind of like concrete steps that are helpful for people trying to move out of a chronic condition. And those are actually posted in a blog that I write called Making Changes. And I think that if you go to my website, there's a link to my blog there. So that if someone is suffering from that, from some kind of chronic condition, there's guidance for them there in that. And other than that, you know, contact me through my website.
And that is wisdompathway.com.
Correct.
Yay. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure and my joy. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. You take care. Be blessed.
Thank
and continue
you.
That amazing work. I'm so moved by it.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. I love the way I feel being able to do that.
And now we know why you were called to move to Honduras, because you're making a difference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes we don't know when we do something, but in retrospect, it shows up.
Absolutely. All righty. You take care. Thank you again.
Thank you. I love
Bye.
You.
I love
Bye-bye.
You too, Milana. Bye-bye. So there you have it, everyone. What an amazing journey we have just taken with Milana. And I would say, please go and get her book and visit her on her website, wisdompathway.com, and support such an amazing cause as the Single Mothers Project in Honduras. And so once again, Affirmations for Living is all about affirming a better way of living, isn't it indeed? It's about discovering your true, authentic self. I am here to assist you on your journey. So, of course, go to my website, affirmationsforliving.net, download my app, Awakened, and get the book, because it journals all of my amazing experiences in altered states and in awake states, and this process of awakening and what it looks and feels like firsthand when you're visited by all sorts of beings and benevolent ones. So until next time, you know, each and every one of us as individuals can make such a difference. So think about what Milana is doing and think about how you can add to that light. Take care. Love and light. You've been listening to Affirmations for Living with Edwige. Join us again next week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit my Facebook page, download my app, Awakened, and visit my website, affirmationsforliving.net. And remember, be the change that you want to see. Until next time, this is Reverend Dr. Edwige. Namaste.